On this short walk around the houses of Los Pedregales, you will learn about the history of the people who lived here before these buildings housed the Tenno Rural Park management offices. The walk is approximately 250 metres long and has an elevation gain of 8 metres and an elevation loss of 8 metres. The path is uneven underfoot on some sections and there are some steps, so it is not suitable for wheelchairs. The time it will take you to complete this walk, including the 6 stops on this audio guide, will be about 30 to 40 minutes. To fully enjoy these walks and to respect the other users of this finca and to collaborate in its conservation, we kindly ask you to follow the signposted route and to keep the property free of litter. Take particular care when crossing the road. The staff of Los Pedregales are at your disposal if you require help or if you have any suggestions to make. You are now going to listen to stop number one. Stop number one. The Valley of El Palmar is in the heart of Tenno Rural Park, on the northwest of the island of Tenerife. This rural park is part of the Canary Islands network of protected natural spaces and also of the European Natura 2000 network. It serves 2 functions: to conserve its natural and cultural heritage and to improve the lives of the people that live in the hamlets, who are the living guardians of our shared traditions. The origin of the name of the Valley of El Palmar is unknown, but it may well derive from the palm groves that probably grew in the lower reaches of the valley. The very first settlers, the Guanches, had already transformed the natural landscape, but after the conquest of the island by the Crown of Castile at the end of the 15th century, large swathes of the island became farmland and pastures. Most of the land in this valley belonged to families of good, social and economic standing, who didn't live here but in La Laguna and other towns on the island of Tenerife. Here, as on the rest of the island, the land was farmed by tenant farmers, or midioneros, simple families who worked from dawn to dusk in exchange for half of what they produced, which was barely enough to survive. The buildings of Los Pedregales currently house the Tenno Rural Park management offices, but until recently this was just one of the privately run farms in the Valley of El Palmar. It originally belonged to the Osuna and Benitez de Lugo families. The main crop was wheat, but potatoes, vineyards, vegetables, fodder for the animals and fruit trees were also grown. From the 1940s onwards, irrigation systems were built on all the coastal areas of the island. Now that they no longer had to depend on the rain, farmers began to grow more profitable crops, such as bananas and tomatoes, for export. The inland farms, ran by tenant farmers, became much less profitable for large landowners. However, Los Pedregales continued to be farmed by midioneros until the 1970s. This shows how fertile this valley was, but it also shows us that the tenant farmers had little alternative, as they continued to work on the land despite the harsh conditions. But it was during these decades that they gradually broke off with their former landlords and sought new ways of subsisting through new working relationships. Then, in the 1970s, Los Pedregales ceased to be a farm and soon after became a publicly owned property. The last tenant farmer of Los Pedregales was Domingo Romero, who is now retired and still lives locally. Domingo himself will be our guide today. He will tell us how people lived here in the last century. His anecdotes and stories will reveal to us how hard life was, but we will also learn about the values of a society that was founded on the spirit of community, of togetherness. These were people who, although they were poor, knew how to enjoy life and were always ready for a fiesta, a dance, or a shared harvest when they could laugh, swap stories, and let their hair down. As you can see around you, these buildings still maintain their traditional charm, although a few changes have been made to adapt them to their current use. In the gardens, plant species that are endemic to the Canary Islands grow in harmony with other species of agricultural interest, creating a unique environment. If you take a closer look, there are information panels to provide you with information on some of the plants.
Hello, my name is Domingo Romero, and I was born in this very house in 1936. I am now 14 years old and I already have a lot of jobs to do on the farm. My only sister is still very small and is not yet old enough to help out with all the work that needs to be done. Two families of medianeros live here. Los Pedregales is divided into two parts by a wall, a border which runs along the entire slope from top to bottom. The land to the left was inherited by the Osuna family, and the land to the right by the Benitez de Lugo family. Each part of the finca is farmed by a family of medianeros, who are the tenant farmers who work the land in exchange for half of what we produce. We also have to give the landowner a tithe, which is a tenth of our half of the harvest. These are the rooms of the two families. My father, my mother, my sister, my grandfather, and I live in the rooms on the right. In front of you is the bedroom, and over on the right is the stable where the horse is kept and the kitchen. In the rooms on the left, the other families have their bedroom, their kitchen, and a room for the wine barrels. They say that townhouses have their own toilet, but we go out there, behind the prickly pear cactus, and we bathe in a bucket of water. This yard in front of the houses is where much of our daily lives happen. The hens are always running around, and I know where they lay their eggs, so I'm in charge of collecting them. The eggs are for the master, and I often take them on foot to La Caleta, down on the coast. My mother is sure to be cooking salted fish. Can you smell firewood and fish stew? In winter, I like to pick the oranges from the tree in the center of the yard. It's not very big yet, but it already gives us many oranges. The pigs like them a lot, and they come to the yard to eat them, because they roam freely, except when we are sowing the fields, when we lock them up then because they dig everything up with their snouts. I'm going to put on my espadrilles to go to school. Here at the farm, I don't wear them so as to not ruin them, but I do when I go to school. I like learning a lot, but sometimes I can't go to my classes because I have to help on the farm. Right then, I can hear my grandfather asking me to go and fetch some grass for the cows. Okay, Grandpa, I'll do it when I get back. If you want, I'll show you around the house of Los Pedregales, and then I have to run off to class. Come with me.
Stop number one ends here. Press pause and go to stop number two. Once there, continue listening. Stop number two.
This house is the cowshed. We've had up to 9 heads of cattle, including cows and calves. The roof used to be made of straw, but now it's made of metal sheeting. Last winter there was a southerly storm, and at midnight we heard a great noise. The wind had lifted up the sheets and the ceiling beams by 0.5 meter. It was pouring down, and we were out in the storm all night looking for rope and tying the roof down. Cows must be looked after really well, not only for their milk, which we mix the goat's milk to make delicious cheese, but because without their strength, we would not be able to plow the fields. For years now, I've been strong enough to lift the plow and help my father on the farm. But without the cows, it would be impossible to plow the whole farm. Sometimes we sell a calf, and without half of the money, we buy oil, sugar, fish, and other things, but we rarely get to eat the meat. That steaming pile in front of the house is cow dung. It smells terrible, but I don't even notice it anymore. You have to stir it in and mix it with ferns to make really good fertilizer that we'll soon be taking up to the fields on the horse, before we sow them. When we do that job, we really stink. So when evening falls, we have to do a good wash in a bucket of water.
Los Pedregales was a farm that mainly grew crops, but cattle, as in all traditional farms, played a fundamental role. The tenant farmers needed the animals to work the land. Here there were several oxen for ploughing and a horse to thresh the grain on the threshing floor and to carry the fertiliser to all the terraces. Also, and to complement the family's diet, they had a few pigs, some chickens and rabbits, and some 4 or 5 goats, which produced milk to make a traditional local cheese that is still held in high esteem. These animals were treated much like everything else on the farm, which meant that Domingo and his family were entitled to half of what they produced. The cattle feed was obtained from the farm itself, crops and grass, and their manure helped to produce a good harvest, so bringing the cycle full circle. The cows used to sleep in a stable and were fed hay, but in winter when the grass grew in abundance, they also spent time outside. It took more than a month to plough the farm, and it was done in autumn, so that the land was ready to plant in winter, ready for the rainy season. Milk production was therefore a secondary activity. The most important thing was for the cows to be strong and docile, so that they could pull the plough. This means that they were not the dairy cows that are seen everywhere today, but a particular breed called Vacabasta, or Canary Islands cow, which are very strong but gentle. When farming was mechanised, these cows ceased to be useful, and this native breed almost disappeared, although nowadays there are conservation programmes, and they can be seen in the livestock fairs and village festivals. As we have seen, although Los Pedregales was a farm that mainly grew crops, livestock also played an essential role in the survival of tenant farmer families. Today, the stable where the cows were kept has been converted into a small room for meetings, talks and exhibitions, and it is perfectly suited to the needs of the management office. Stop number 2 ends here. Press pause and go to stop number 3. Once there, continue listening. Stop number 3. This small space that forms a courtyard between the back of the visitor centre and the audiovisual room is an area full of evocative memories for Domingo. Here he spent many hours of his childhood, and as a young man, helping his father build ploughs and other tools, not only for the use of his own family, but also to lend them to others in the valley who needed them. These agricultural supplies were not paid for with money, but they were part of a chain of favours, for which there were no papers to sign, but which was common practice and respected by all. It was a kind of today you, tomorrow me arrangement, which was essential for the survival of a community with limited means. All the families were indebted to each other, and so they went to help out on the other farms when necessary.
The other day, my father woke me up at 2 in the morning to help him make a plough for Mr. Carlos, the medianero of the other half of Los Pedregales. Mr. Carlos broke his plough yesterday. He was going quickly with his team of oxen and struck one of those big stones that are hidden underground. There are many stones like that all over the slopes of the farm. They say that's why it's called Los Pedregales, because the Spanish word for stone is piedra. Well, the oxen are strong and they broke the plough. It happens all the time. And as Mr. Carlos had to continue ploughing the next day, and we had so many things to do during the day, my father woke me up at 2 in the morning to help him. I had a hard time getting out of bed, but once I was up, I was fine, because my father tells me stories and things and I love listening to him. And I'm proud of myself, because I'm only 14 years old, but I'm already stronger than him, and I have already made ploughs in the valley of El Palmar. This is where we sit and get down to work whenever needed. But it's time to move on. I still have lots to tell you, and I'm going to be late for school.
Stop number 3 ends here. Press pause and go to stop number 4. Once there, continue listening. Stop number 4.
From here, you can see the whole of the Finca de los Pedregales. It stretches from below our houses to the top of the hill. It is quite a large farm. In the lower part, there are the best fields. They are the biggest and have the best soil. The higher they are, the smaller they are. But we have to plant all of them so that we can eat. The hillside is very steep, and many walls were built centuries ago to make flat terrace fields for farming. The cows go up there to plow the terraces, and at the very top, up in the rocky outcrops above, where farming is impossible, there is some heather growing. That's where the goats are tied up. You have to move them every day so they can reach the fresh grass. My mother goes up to milk them and move them twice a day, and uses the trip to bring back down an armful of firewood for the kitchen. She comes down carrying the milk churn in her hand and the firewood on her head. Looking after the whole farm like this is a lot of work. Just as well all the locals help each other out. To harvest the wheat or the potatoes, up to 50 people get together and you have to feed them at 11 o'clock in the morning with gofio mixed with figs and oranges. And then it's lunch at 2 o'clock with potatoes, cheese or fish. And then, at sunset, the day's work is finished and we all eat frangollo, which is a mixture of almonds, raisins, and milk. And it's delicious.
Today, the farm is being used to grow native Canarian trees. In the upper part, there are groves of Sabina and Almasigo. But only half a century ago, you can well understand that to keep the whole farm as productive as possible, task followed task, without ever time for a rest. The seeds were sown between December and March to take advantage of the rainy season, since the farming practice on this farm was rain-fed agriculture. There were no irrigation systems, so the farm depended entirely on the water that fell from the sky. Before sowing, several weeks were needed to plough and fertilise the land. When the harvest was ready, it was brought in, and half was separated out for the landowner, and the other half was carefully managed so that the family could eat all year round. And a part was also set aside to use as seed the following year. For this tightly managed system to work, two basic elements were needed: mutual assistance between neighbours and crop rotation to keep the soil fertile. Crop rotation consisted of alternately growing wheat and potatoes in the fields. For 1 year, potatoes were planted on half of the farm, and land was also set aside for lentils, chickpeas, lupins, broad beans, and a mixture of cereal grains for cattle feed. The edges of these fields were used to plant pumpkins, bubangos, a type of courgette native to the Canary Islands, and corn. The other half of the farm was planted with wheat, and the following year they swapped the crops around. Grapevines were grown on the walls that contained the fields, and depending on the year, the finca produced between 800 and 1,000 litres of wine a year. This wine was offered to all the locals that came to help out on the farm, to accompany the meals they were given in return for their labour. The rotation of the crops, together with crop diversification, improved the chances of a good harvest and increased the variety of produce that the family of tenant farmers could consume. But even then, they were never entirely safe from having a bad year, because they were completely dependent on the weather. A dry year, a gale at the worst moment, or an untimely downpour could endanger their survival, as Domingo will tell us at the next stop. Stop number 4 ends here. Press pause and go to step number 5. Once there, continue listening. Stop number 5.
This circular area with a stone floor is the threshing floor, where we thresh the wheat. In summer, the wheat is harvested, then the stalks are bound up in sheaves by the women, which are brought to the threshing floor. They say it's best to carry the sheaves on your shoulder all the way down, without stopping to rest, because that way you lose less grain on the way than if you bring them on the horse, or if you put them down halfway, down to catch your breath. That's why it's such hard work. The bundles of wheat are piled up here, on the right-hand side of the threshing floor. Then, little by little, layers of stalks are spread across the floor and we walk the horse round and round, dragging the threshing board. This is a large wooden board with lava stone chips on the bottom to tear the ears of grain from the stalks. One layer is threshed, and then another layer on top of that, and then another. Once all the wheat has been threshed, you have to winnow it to separate out the grain, which we do by throwing it into the air with a winnowing fork. The heavier grain falls at your feet, and the straw and the chaff are blown further away by the wind. This all has to be done on sunny days to prevent the grain from spoiling. One summer, it drizzled 5 days in a row when we already had 3 layers of wheat on the threshing floor and we had to stop threshing. So as to not waste time, my father and I went to the Casa Nueva and made 3 large wicker baskets with the straw from the wheat. But we were very worried because the wheat on the threshing floor was getting soaked and it was all work from that year, all our food, and all the seed for next year. But in the end, the sun came out and we managed to spread out the wheat to dry. We saved quite a lot of it. Although some of it had already started to germinate, which meant we couldn't use it as seed, we had to roast and grind it to make gofio because we couldn't afford to throw it away. Imagine after all that hard work, how upset we were. And it wasn't only us. Many other families were affected because wheat got drenched on threshing floors all over the valley.
The threshing floors were where life was concentrated in summer after bringing in the harvest. In the Valley of El Palmar alone, there were dozens of them. The work was very hard and had to be done quickly when the weather conditions were right. In summer, there was also time for fiestas, moments of rest and leisure for locals who would visit other villages and played music and danced until dawn. In 1968, the farmers in the valley banded together and bought a mechanical thresher that made their work much easier. Shortly after their acquisition, they stopped using the thresher floors of El Palmar and the practice fell into disuse across the island. However, the coming together and the celebrations around threshing season continue to arouse nostalgia. For that reason, over the last few decades, the practice of threshing has been revived on this threshing floor for recreational purposes. It takes place every year during the festival in honour of the patron saint, Our Lady of Consolation, in the second half of September.
Are you thinking that with so many jobs, I have no time to play? Well, I'm a man now, but I used to play a lot. I had time to work and play. I played with spinning tops, marbles, at hide and seek, at catching lizards. We used to make toy carts with the pads of the prickly pear cactus and wires. Now, I don't have time to play, you know? This is my last year of school. I'm already 14 years old, and if I want to carry on with my studies, I'd have to go to high school in La Laguna. And that's impossible for me because I have to work on the farm. But I want to make the most of these last few months of school. So it's time for me to go. I'll slip into my espadrilles and run to class. If my grandfather catches me hanging around, he'll ask me to go and fetch some grass for the cows. But why don't you stick around? Go for a walk around the finca. Look how well looked after it is. Nice to meet you. Adios.
Stop number 5 ends here. Press pause and go to stop number 6. Once there, continue listening. Stop number 6. After this walk through the recent past of Los Pedregales, you have arrived once again at the houses of the tenant farmers, which today house the Tenno Rural Park Management Office. Here, specialists from different fields work to coordinate the conservation and development of this protected natural space. Nowadays, most of the farms in Tenno are not in use. Many local plant species were on the verge of disappearing in recent centuries due to land being given over to farming and livestock breeding, and because of the over-exploitation of wood. These native species are now beginning to recover. Thanks to the natural regeneration of forests and various actions undertaken by the government, today we can enjoy a nature that is on the path to recovery. But at the same time, the population of the rural park has declined and is aging. It is necessary to find a balance between the conservation of nature and the quality of life of the people who live here. For this reason, we encourage you to do your bit to help maintain this environment when you consume local produce and when you explore these paths, which were built to link up the island's populations and harness its resources. Today, these paths allow you to enjoy the landscape and to get to know the people that live in Tenno Rural Park. Domingo, who is now 81 years old, has experienced at first hand the complete transformation of life in these parts. A transition from the constant burden of daily labours on the farm and the struggle for survival in a highly unequal economic system in which tenant farmers got the worst end of the deal to the world of today. The living is undoubtedly easier, but what's lacking nowadays is the way that communities banded together and how people's word was their bond.
I have seen how life has made a 180-degree turn. I've been lucky enough to live through all stages of life and can see that everything is completely different today. But we should not forget the work we once had to do, how hard it was to plant these fields to provide food for us to eat. I remember how the women checked the fields after the harvest in case any ears of corn were left behind, just to make sure we hadn't wasted anything. I also remember the times when many emigrated to Venezuela because people went hungry here in the valley and nearly all the young men left to seek their fortune. As for my family, we suffered hardships and times were hard, but we didn't go hungry because we had a good farm. Even though we were only tenant farmers, it provided enough for us to get by. Back then, folk were honourable and they kept their word. Favours that were owed were always repaid. And as for us, even if we were in need, we would never cheat when we divided up the harvest. If our share was half, we would measure it out to the very last grain, and we only kept our half. But it was also because we were all a bit scared of the master. He and his family only came in the summer, and they stayed in their house in the village. They went for walks around the farm, and they went hunting. When we asked him for something, he gave it to us. But we were nervous, even fearful of asking him for something. I remember one year when the whole valley was infected by a crop pest which spoiled a large part of the wheat crop. With what we managed to save, we didn't even have enough for seed for planting the following year. Because in our house, we always kept enough seed to sow our half. Then my father said one day, "I'm going to the master's house to talk to him, because if we keep the wheat from the harvest for seed, then what are we going to eat? Nothing." Then my grandfather, may he rest in peace, said to him, "Oh my God, how could you possibly say anything to that gentleman down there?" But my father answered, "Well, I'll just have to go. We can't go without food." And he went to speak to the master. And when Don Luis saw him, he was surprised. "Domingo, what are you doing down here?" And he said, "Look, Don Luis, I'm here for this and that." And Don Luis said, "What? What do you mean? You provide all the seed? Why don't I provide half and you the other half? Go back up to the farm and take everything you need from the granary. And from that year on, things changed, and we provided half the seed. But I remember how my grandfather trembled, thinking, "Aye, he's going to throw us off the farm," until my father came back and told us what happened. Today, life is much easier, but people today just don't know how to work the land like we used to. And that's bad news, because no matter what age we're living in, we eat what the land provides, and we cannot allow ourselves to forget how to care for and how to cultivate the land. I am so pleased that the child that I once was has been able to guide you around the farm. That boy would never have guessed that his home would one day become the office of the rural park. If you had told him, he would never have believed you. Such are the twists and turns of life. Well, goodbye. Come back whenever you want.
Stop number 6 ends here, and this is the end of the walk. Thank you very much for keeping us company.